Hundepraxis, der Podcast mit Christina Räder.
So, wir sind bei einer neuen Folge vom Hundepraxis-Podcast und ich muss gleich einmal switchen auf Englisch, denn heute habe ich einen Gast für euch, wo ihr nochmal ein wenig euer Englisch vielleicht aufbessern dürft oder besser zuhören müsst, denn heute geht es um, ja, Training und Züchten von Hunden, die für das Training, für die Retrieverarbeit, worauf ist zu achten, worum geht's? Und da habe ich mir heute einen Gast eingeladen, den ihr vielleicht schon kennt, wenn ihr ein wenig in der Retrieverwelt unterwegs seid. Und yeah, I say very welcome, Kevin Butler. Thanks for having you here. So we have some questions today because, it's not a secret that I picked up a dog the latest time at yours. So a little coffee, not biscuit anymore, a little coffee comes from your kennel. And I have to say, we know for some years, and I watched several dogs from you, and also have some related dogs seen before, and also used for breeding. And when we met in, I think it was the beginning of February, the bitch and the mother from the little one, you showed us a little bit in training and. But the first thing she did was also on the ground where I think you don't have so many people around the dog all the time. That's not her typical her typical thing about. And the first thing she made was saying hello to us. And she was so friendly and came to us and, said, whoa. And she got lots of cuddles. And then she was fine and worked very, very nice. And that was the point I was thinking about. Maybe you will go to make a litter with her. And I asked for. So it was not a decision that I made spontaneously. That was planned a little bit before. But because I'm, or what's the thing I want to come to, you have really, really, really big background about dogs. Maybe you can take us a little bit with you, how you came into dogs, how, what you did, what you are doing with the dogs, and you are training, you are trialing, and you're breeding. That's a nice combination. And so you have different points of view about how a gun dog should be for you. Maybe first, a little bit about you and your work with the dogs, how you came into it.
Yeah, basically. And thank you. Yes, I could write a book about it, actually.
You should.
It would take a long, long time. And I could speak for hours about dogs, hours, about my experiences from being very young to my knowledge that I know now is fantastic. Basically, where it all started was we always had a dog at the house. And it was always a hunting dog. It's been in my family for certainly my dad and granddad. So it's always been there. My mother's brothers also, so they came together, predominantly Labradors, they did, but I didn't start with Labradors. I started with my own hunting dog, which was a Sighthound, which is a Whippet, crossed with a sheepdog collie, which is a common cross in the UK. And as we now have, we've got Chewy, as you've seen, and that's going back 40 years now, back to where I started with that dog. It's very interesting with the knowledge I know now about which I didn't have then.
Yes.
The first dog I had, I was learning more with, as well as the dog, about field craft, about how to hunt in conditions with scent. There wasn't so much emphasis on the dog, what it was, what type it was. But I soon realized that the dog, because of its size and its build, was only capable of catching rabbit, not hare. And that was a learning. When I see the hare, just go completely away from the dog when hunting, but the rabbit didn't. So that was a learning thing. But mainly it was me learning field craft, the conditions to go hunting, the best conditions for the dog to hunt, the wind, whether it was frosty, whether it was warm, has a big effect on hunting scent with dogs. So then, as a young teenager, I progressed then into advancing and keeping with the collies and breeding my own dogs. Yeah. So that's when it started. And it was an automatic choice of breeding from the best. The best dogs, what were efficient catch dogs. Very efficient. No emphasis on temperament. If the dog Right. was aggressive, we just didn't think about that. We didn't think about that in breeding, yeah? If it was aggressive with humans, we didn't care about that. We didn't care. But that totally changes through the years with different breeds. And then I was breeding my own dogs with the best dogs, keeping with the collie, which is the intelligent dog for the sheep and everything. And then eventually entering into competitions in field trials for lurchers, which is totally different. You're asking a dog that has ground in it to not chase a rabbit, which is a very difficult thing to do. But with the collie, the intelligence, you can train them to do it, you know. Not consistently, but you can train them to do it. And that's how it quickly progressed over the years with those dogs. And then it will be 30 years ago, I got my first Labrador. But
30
I bought,
years ago.
Yeah. So I've always had an emphasis on that dog being obedient. All my dogs have to be obedient, yeah? They have to be there. They have to know when to come back and everything. And this dog, I didn't go with any trainers. I had a dog that would be a more natural dog of hunting. I wouldn't have been able to do what I can do with a dog now regarding big distances and holding a dog and different things. So the dog was generally just a dog around me. He would not run in with birds or anything. We had that mastered with the dog. And he was a good companion, the dog. He was just a shooting dog. But then after going to a local gun dog club to watch and meeting a couple of people, I kind of thought in my head, we need to have more. This is what we need to do. So there was always the competition in the background with the dog, see? And once I went to the clubs and watched the competitions, me being of a competitive nature, thought, I will try to do this, training the dogs, yeah? And I think I went through five dogs, Labradors. All the problems put in by myself, yeah? Noise, things like that, running in, all the problems. And I call it an education, an apprenticeship, where the real hard work is and the biggest learning is make the mistake. Always make the mistake. You'll never learn. Nobody fails unless if you don't learn from your mistakes, you have failed. But if you learn from your mistakes, you never fail. That's how I look at it with gun dog training. Yes, I used to go out with serious trialers training, but my dogs were never as good. Never. But I always had it in my head. In my head, I will get there. And that's just me as nature. Maybe other people don't have that. That attitude to not failing. I will never let it beat me. Never, never, never. And just keep going with the dogs and making improvements. And then, so I had early success with the dog, field trial winner. With that dog, I was bringing dogs in then that I had nothing to do with the breeding. So I didn't really know the dogs or anything, but going along with training and doing the early competing, the knowledge of dogs and watching dogs work, but also watching dogs how they are with their owner, watching dogs around other dogs, watching dogs when you go into the trailer to go to the shoot, how they react with other dogs, how they react in that environment. You know, read the dog with the handler. Is that dog fearful of that handler? Or is there a true bond there with that dog? You know, watching is a great thing. You don't have to say anything, but watch is a great thing. Watch. That's how I've learned. Just watch and learn. Watch, learn, watch, learn. Yes, you'll have questions. Why this? But always watch and learn. In the informative years at the start, watch and learn. Watch the dogs. Look at the pedigree. Watch other dogs. Look at the pedigree and see if there's some kind of pattern with the dog. Or is the dog, and by watching dogs and handlers, is the dog just a very well-trained dog? Or is the dog showing natural ability? Yeah. Because sometimes in trials, we have to pick the bird with the dog, not the dog naturally pick the bird. Because sometimes the scenting conditions are that bad. We know the bird is there. We have to control the dog to that pinpoint area to pick that. And that is not all the time. A lot argue that that is becoming how trialing is, that it's all handler picking the birds. I don't really think we've got more handling in with the dogs, but we're not totally picking birds, the handlers picking birds, you know. It's a combination of two. And I'm from the school that I like to be able to control a dog at all times. It's got to listen at all times, and you need to build that bond between you. And you need the right dogs. What will do that as well? See, and your training, you. What I say is, condition the dog to take the control all the time. Maybe 15 handles to pick something. I train like that. I'll do 15. I'm not bothered about picking the dummy, but I'm more bothered, is the dog listening? Is the dog moving? Is it taking the pressure of my commands? Yeah. So I train like that rather than just, oh, let's make it easy. Like, let's say the dog will pick in four and it picks, it has success. But we may come a time in a competition where it is difficult scenting, and we may have to handle the dog 8 times. 10 times. Now, I watch a lot of dogs in competition, and they can only handle four times before they start trying to find on their own. Yeah. I'm not saying that is all the time, but what I'm saying is that we need it in our weapon to be able to do that. A lot of the time we're referring on the dog mark, it marks, the dog goes straight out pick. But there are times where the scent is not there and we need to pick that bird with the dog, not the dog pick the bird, because sometimes they can just go all over. And you need to have that bond to keep bringing the dog back to the area and have that trust between you saying to the dog, keep coming back to where I ask you. We're a partnership and I will find you the reward. It's that type of thing. Yeah. And that's it with dogs. And then we moved on to breeding our own dogs then. So the matriarch of all my dogs that can be traced back is to a dog called Gable Gore Shuffler of Turpin Green. The bitch was a bitch from a guy who I knew who picked up grouse all the time. That's all he did, is pick up all the time. All summer on the grouse and all winter. So he took a bitch of his to Jane Corley's Waterford Fergus. And I had a subsequent pup out that litter, Evie, who was my second field trial winner. And she was a nice dog, Evie. This is where I spotted the temperament. She was lovely. She was nice and loving, great with other dogs. And she was really nice. She was. And Evie became a field trial winner. But Evie never ran in any open competitions because I had another dog, what I was running. So, and I was working at the time. So the time was difficult. Also, she came coming in season in winter in the shooting. So that made it difficult. So we kept Evie back. And then we just started using what I thought was prominent stud dogs in field trialing, you breeding from Evie. And that in itself was an education. Me starting to think that dog will be okay with Evie. I didn't always get it right. I didn't always get it right. We saw different results within litters with temperament. But obviously, the best temperament litter was from what Django came from. And it was just fantastic. He was so loving, and you know, he wanted to do everything for you. He did. Oh, fantastic dog. And we're very quite lucky today, because of all the owners from his pups who I see all over, everywhere. That is the biggest thing they talk about, temperament. And I believe that is the first thing that everybody should look for in a dog, is the temperament. And what I mean by that is that, and it's difficult because not all stud dogs, pass on their qualities to the pups. I think there's a book called Prepotent Stud Dogs, and it's about prominent stud dogs passing on their qualities into their offspring. Like in competition, in temperament, and in looks. And from what I've seen in his offspring, not all, because he mated a lot of bitches, not all, depending what the bitch is also like, because a lot of breeders think that the bitch is the most important thing in the in the breeding. If that's what you think, that's fine. Yeah, I think it still is. If you've got a prepotent stud dog, which you have proof of it passing on its qualities, it will be 50-50. It can improve the bitch line. The dog, it's difficult because I think we can only judge it by a stud dog that's been used quite a bit and the success that the offspring have over the years. And that's how the record books will be looked at. But you also have got to get the offspring in the right hands trainers. You can.
That's also a point, yes.
And already I've seen very good potential dogs in the round gowns. Very, you know. And it, when I've been watching in trials and everything, his offspring's coming through now. You know, I just stand there and I just go, oof, what could that dog have been with a little bit more polish and a little bit more, you know, I mean, it's changed so much. Gun dogs has changed so much. Even over the last 15 years, it's changed so much that the people will be say that they can train any dog to be a successful competition dog. Yes, I could go along with that. But if you have the right temperament of dog to the training and the dog with a natural ability to pick the game with a fantastic trainer, you will have an elite dog. Or a good trainer, you will have an elite dog. And this is, there are champion dogs, field trial champions, and I believe there are elite dogs whereby just you have to look at their the record of qualifying for the championship consistently, and then if they've gone on to win it or second, you know, you're looking at special dogs, you know, that you know, if they can win it, keep qualifying. There's a lot of dogs that keep qualifying, but they don't win that championship. And I think it's a case of a bit of luck in the championship, but you're also your dog that is hitting form. Yeah. You can also have the biggest unlucky thing where I had it last week. Bird shot, still alive as it's going down. Never going to pick it. It had ran soon as it hit. But the dog got to the area and I left him because I knew it was going to run. I couldn't do anything else. I just stood in silence and he was working, but couldn't quite pick the bird. He'd have ran straight away. We couldn't see it because it was in the cover. And them type of things is very bad luck. First dog down. It needs to be looked at, that rule in trialing, yeah? Where I've kept a dog in this year when it could have been first dog down because it made an exceptional job of trying to find the bird, you know? And it, you know, why should we get rid of a dog that is a very good dog because of a rule like that? Where I think judges have got to be stronger and say, listen, this dog, when it's been sent, it's gone to where the bird landed. The handler hasn't done anything. He's not been going, oh, go there, go there, go there. He's left the dog, the natural ability, and the dog has kept hunting. It's never asked for assistance. It's always kept hunting, trying to find the bird, you know, head down, hunting correctly, not running around with its head up, but hunting, proper hunting. In that case, there's a strong case to keep the dog in the competition. You know, you could be getting rid of the best dog in the competition, you know.
Maybe, yes, yeah.
Well, I've seen it this year with my own dog in a couple of trials where we've gone right to the very end. And you know, maybe, you know, sometimes you get the best dogs in trials go out at the end on maybe just a little bird that's what not been right, and but that is trialing, you know. You don't, if you don't like disappointment, don't try. It tests
That's
your mental strength.
yeah, oh, it teaches you, yes.
But I would say with dogs, for people breeding dogs, do a lot of studying. Don't listen to people who say, that's a good dog, that's a good dog. Go and see the dog. Go and ask people who's had pups from it. Go and get your knowledge. What is that dog like with other dogs? Because I have many dogs. I cannot have aggressive dogs in my kennels because I can't be saying, oh, you have to go in there because you're like that. You've got to go in there. And I have bitches and dogs. So when the bitches are in season, the testosterone on the dogs is higher and I can't have fighting, you know, the dominance or anything. You know, you just can't have that in the kennel. So temperament is the first thing in a dog, definitely. It's got to be the right temperament. A temperament not only nice, but also a temperament to train. Trainability. That I kind of look for a dog myself, which is likes to go, but has a nice little bit of sensitivity around you. Yeah. So then it makes the stop as a puppy, it will make it easier. Not a dog that is, and when it's, and the adrenaline is going, I don't listen. I just want to pick. Them dogs are no good. Maybe good for working test.
Yeah.
Not good for field trials in the UK. We need dogs that have got the temperament where they're also calm in situations, where they are calm in situations, yet when we send them out, they go nicely out, yeah? So there's a lot to consider when you and bringing the two together, you know, what is your bitch like? Is she slow? So you then need to bring probably something with a little bit more. It is difficult. Breeding dogs for top competition is very difficult. It is. It's very difficult because within the litters, you will have a difference. You will have a difference within the litters. There was difference within Django's litter in the pups. There was when I, because obviously I kept some back, but and I've done it since, and they're all different. But it's just getting everything. You can make it a little less of a problem by studying the dogs that you want to bring together.
Yes, I think really, really, really much things, what you look for, what you're watching for. And when you talked about that, you all over the years watched how the dogs are in the trailers and the kennels, when they're around people, when they are with other dogs, so yeah, that you always watched how the dogs are. When I look around, what, of course, we here in Germany, we don't have the field trials. If we're going on field trials, we are going to other European countries. And so we have the working tests. And the working tests, like you mentioned before, I don't think that it's just my opinion. You have to, really have fast dogs that are really, really keen on retrieves. And like you told also before, when they're in the adrenaline and they want to pick up a dummy, they go out and do the fingers in the ears or something like that. And when I look around, what I'm searching for when I look after a pup, it's really not easy to find litters where I don't know dogs out of the relationships that are the related dogs from that are not making any noise, that are not hard mouthing, that are nice with other dogs, nice with other people. And I think it changed a bit. And I don't know if it's just, what we are looking more for. If it's more, if we want to have a fast dog that's nothing or that ignores everything on the ground and really smashing through everything, and the character follows after it, or is the character before? So why is it so important for you to look at the temperament in the first thing? So you have dogs that are really, really nice, really easy with other dogs, with other people. They're always friendly. It doesn't matter with which dogs I met you. And that's also the point. You take so much care in your breeding for what you may be, to avoid these faults, what people can maybe look a little bit more better to if they like to breed or if they are choosing a dog.
It's very difficult, isn't it? Because we have different groups of people with retrievers. We have the working test, and we have the trial, and then we have the general people who like just shooting and picking up. I think one of the big advantages of trialing, is that you have a dog there that's been judged in extreme conditions, judged for damaging birds, judged for sitting while shooting. One thing we can't judge for is temperament in a dog. I've seen champions aggressive when they get in a close proximity of another dog. They don't like other dogs around them. That is the one thing that the person on the street, the shooting man, cannot. That is his risk, he or her are relying on the stud dog or the person who has the bitch to be honest. But unfortunately, money takes over everything. It does. It really has. You see, in the UK, we have now stud dogs totally advertised on colour and health tests. That is what their main thing is. But they also like to mention, but it has 8, 10, 12 field trial champions. But it's all advertised on colour, on health tests, but not temperament or working ability. And this is what I'm saying. It's difficult for the high percentage of people to actually see these dogs, what the field trial dogs at work, because it's such a special thing that not everybody can go to the field trial and see. We're traveling all the time in different, we travel all the time, different, times of the week, different places in the country. Can you still see me? It's gone a bit dark, hasn't it?
Little bit.
I don't think you need to see me anyhow, do you? No, no. But yeah, and a lot of people can't see that actual dog, its temperament. The videos for the championships were quite good because you could see a dog running and working then and everybody could watch them. But fortunately, they have all stopped now, they've all stopped. I would, if I was giving advice for somebody who is wanting a puppy, do your research. If that person is creditable, who is either selling the pup or the stud dog, they will invite you to come and see that dog. Obviously, it's difficult for a bitch, but maybe not with the pups. You can still see that bitch work when it's off the pups. But I've always said to people, many people said to me, could I see your stud dogs? Come and see them work at mine. Come and see how they are around me. Come and see how they are with other dogs. I have nothing to hide, you know. See what the relationship's like and see if you like that dog. Even you can, just by watching a dog, you can learn so much. You can. You know, it's the ones that I would certainly ask that. I would certainly never use a stud dog without me seeing it actually work and how it is with people. Because you will then, if you go about it that way, you will get rid of people who are just breeding for money. And that's what they are. They're not, the market today is all about money, not working ability. You know, I would, if I wasn't in competition with dogs, I would have the best temperament. I would go for the best temperament dog, the best looking dog, because the way commercial shooting's going in the UK, I'll prove it. I have a lurcher now. And I'm going to tell you a tale which was fantastic. It happened last week. We saw a bird get shot and it had a leg down. I sent Rex for the bird. It was a long way away into a wood. The dog went to the wood, hunting. I thought it was the area. And I had, how many dogs did I had 8 dogs with me picking up. So, and then he came back out the wood, shoved him back to another area. This is while the shoot is still shooting. I thought, I know it wasn't going to run or anything because it had a broken leg, but I just thought it'd be a nice retrieve out the way. Nothing. So I called him back. I thought, I'll come to that bird in a minute. In the meantime, there was other birds dropping, so I got other dogs on other birds picking. And then after the shoot, that drive had finished, we went into the wood. And what I do is let all my dogs go and just say, lost, lost. And they work as a pack, yeah? The lurcher picked the bird. Now, this is where the different breeds of dog differ. The lurcher picked the bird running to me, but didn't like the other dogs around it. Because you think it's greyhound and it's collie. It's not a Labrador, what for years has been bred to work around other dogs. So that is the bit we need to work on. And I hadn't... because he's still a pup, I hadn't worked on that part whereby, because he does retrieve at home here, you know, I can send him like a Labrador. I've been training him like a Labrador. Go back, you know, and it's a lot slower, the training, but we just do little bits and more. And he's nice. He sticks with us. You know, he's a nice dog to have around. And the shooting doesn't bother him at all. But that side highlighted a side of me whereby we've only trained on our own and he comes to me. So I now need to introduce a dog where when he's retrieving, he ignores the dog and he brings it to me, see? Little things like that, see? But I was amazed that that dog picked that bird. There was 8 dogs looking for it.
Eight
dogs. Spaniels and Labrador. Flat coat, spaniels, Labradors, all looking for it. And the lurcher picked it. Fantastic. I was so, if nothing else happened that day, I was pleased that that dog, that breed, picked that bird. Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Looking around all the Labradors about the temperament and how nice they're bred and how nice they're trained in the lurcher.
Yeah. But also, going back to breeding, what we did last year is do a bit of a trial breeding whereby, and this is something I played about with 30 years ago with the lurcher, the hunting dog, where we did line breeding, whereby we went back to using the dog's parents back in, reintroducing it into the pedigree. You have to be very careful when you do it. You got to know what you're doing. But we did that with a bitch that shared the same mother as Django. But the bitch, the mother was the grandmother. It was great grandmother to grandmother in the breeding. So we have that. We kept this dog back. And he's getting up for 8 months now. And he is a nice dog, but everything is right. The health is there. Yeah. We'll only know that certainly the temperament's there. It's fantastic, the temperament. No issues with that. But I'm hoping we have a fantastic working dog from that. It's an experiment, you know, in my own experiment. But we ought we have a fantastic hunting dog where we bring the qualities back in together. And I did that 30 years ago with my proper hunting dogs. And I had fantastic results from that. One particular litter, the pups were fantastic hunting dogs. 30 years ago, they were. The main dog I had 30 years ago was called Jet. And she was formidable. And she was crossbred. She was like line bred parents back. Didn't matter because it was a crossbred breed then. We didn't even have those health tests then with a running dog. Different breed of dog to Labrador or anything. But we still had to be careful with the temperament of the dogs. The dogs' temperaments were nice. And the subsequent pups were nice. But they were fantastic hunting dogs. They were really fantastic hunting dogs. I used to get people coming out with us hunting and used to come, oh, could we come and watch this dog? We've heard about it. He said, yeah, come along and watch a hunt. And she was formidable. I've got some very, very old film footage of it. One day I may get it out and show people it hunting this dog. But it's something, I think breeding is something that has to be taken very seriously.
Very seriously. But it's also, maybe come back to this, it's a big point also for us as trainers, I think, because you have both sides, or no, three sides, three parts, because you're the breeder, you're a trainer, and you are also on your own taking part in trials, you're working your dogs, you're starting, and you're judging. So we have four points of view, and the breeding is, would you agree with that, you can't train everything, that you have to?
No, definitely not. There are characteristics in every dog I have which I haven't trained. It's like Rex. He has a fantastic hunting, natural hunting. I didn't train that. Where other dogs, if they don't hold the area nice and hunt, we have to train that. Where Rex never had to train hunting. And when he's hunting for a bird, a wounded bird, and there are birds getting up next to him, right next to him, he never looks at the birds. And it's nice when you see him hunting, because there'll be birds going away, or they could shoot a bird near him. He doesn't go and chase after that bird if it's gone down. He just knows that he's working with me to find that bird, what he's on like that. I've never trained that. Some dogs, you'll shoot a bird and you're on that whistle, stop, dog, we'll run over there and bring it back, see. But different little qualities. And my yellow line is different to the black line, a lot different, because of the dogs what are in the pedigree, see. There's a lot to it. There is. You cannot train everything into a dog. You can't. you know, like Rex, I never do hunting exercises with him, because if I did, he is very hunty. Or I'll probably do a bit more holding an area and holding an area, and all, but getting her to put her head down, you know. Little things in different dogs, I'm trying to think. Yeah. But you do get dogs what are, and I've probably had the dog what just ticked every box. You know, he had natural and he wanted to work with me, you know. And I think aura will come to that as well. I see it in her. I see it inside her. I do. I see different things when I'm training dogs. How quick they are to take on the training session. But it's so complex, his training. You've got to change things all the time. Well, I do. I change things all the time. Change it. I do short, especially with me, you know, me try. I do very short sessions. When they're older for competition, I do very technical short sessions. So I get the best from the dog. It's absorbed into the dog's brain. I try to get the dog's full energy doing that actual thing when I'm doing, so it never switches off. It's always with me. And then I put it away, I get another dog out, and I'll do another session, you know. I set little courses out doing different things, you know, technical things. I'm always thinking, change things for dogs. Have I thought of this? Have I thought of that? You know, and even then in competition, it never goes. Sometimes it never, there's some things where you think you've trained for, you'll come up against a situation where, you know, you'll have problems with the dog, you know.
So many different things you're looking at, breeding, the training, and so much very, very, very interesting information you gave us here. And I could also speak hours and hours.
Well, I did a podcast in America, and that went on for a long time about dogs. I mean, in America, when I spoke with the chap in America, their dogs are even more up there, hyper. They need that dog for that competition. Yes. Noise isn't a problem in America. We cannot have it in field trials in the UK. It is a big no-no. In America, they need the drive in the dog. They need the focus and the drive in the dog in competition. So, yeah, if that's the dogs that they want, yeah. And I do believe now in working tests in this country, we have now getting a different dog now to do a test dog or a trialing dog. I will make this point. You are very much less likely to see a very, very successful test dog make a top trialing dog. The temperament for the job is wrong, or the training, what they've been allowed to do in tests, will not fit in with trialing. It's a different dog, you know.
Yes. So it is really, really so many things to look at. And yeah, if you're looking for a dog, always take the qualities, always have a look about what the people are talking about. It's nice, but better you go out and watch the dogs you are interested in. And yeah, I think also a good point to, you have to know what you want when you are searching. Yeah. So if you are going to a working test and there you just have to have a quiet dog for two minutes for the exercise there, and you maybe can do it, it's fine. But yeah. If you want to do other things, you have maybe to look for other qualities.
That it's having the dog for what you want it for, isn't it? And training along that, isn't it? You know, if you're happy to do working tests, which I'm not interested at all. It just doesn't, I don't know why, but maybe because I'm the country man and I'm the, you know, hunting man. I, one of those, canvas dummy.
Oh, wow. It's a pink one.
Is it yours?
No.
Somebody had left it. If you know ADA, come and get your dummy. It's been there for over a year.
Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, that is where I'm probably different, where canvas dummy, I don't like training with dummies anyhow. I just cannot get, you know, some dog, and you'll see that in dogs, some dogs will, they know when they're training on dummies and they don't have that same commitment. But as a trainer, it's getting your dog to think around how to get the best out of a dog if it doesn't like dummies. And Rex doesn't like dummies. But this is where the experience comes in. I make the session short, make it exciting, and he does it, see?
Yes.
It's great.
I have some dogs that are, yeah, they can understand Rex very well.
Yeah. But with coffee, he'll be fine.
Oh, yes. I think he will be very fine.
He will like dummies.
He will like to carry around everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Baldy is the same.
Yeah, nice. So I have to say thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
For your points here to bring out, and also to wish you good luck for the next trial. I think tomorrow you're going.
Yeah. And all week I'm trialing, so.
Okay.
Different dog, yeah.
Okay, then much luck and success and much fun with the dog in the field.
Yeah.
I don't know what to wish more for.
Thank you.
Nice week before. So thank you very much.
And you take care, okay?
Yes, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hundepraxis, der Podcast mit Christina Räder.